Welcome to A World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tapman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places,
like a coffee shop in an airport terminal,
or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good.
Welcome to A World of Good podcast. I am Nate Tapman here with my co-host, Andrew Gale. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I mean, our intro music, I was listening to it the other week, and it sounds like we're going to be traveling and telling all these great stories, which was certainly the plan. But instead, the biggest travel experience I've had recently is I moved my home office from my bedroom to our storage room. Not a whole lot of great stories of God working. I mean, God certainly worked through that, but not a whole lot of great stories to talk about there. But yeah, we're doing well. How about you?
Yeah, doing good. To your point, we had a couple of trips planned in the springtime. One was going to be our site visit to Madrid. That got canceled, obviously, and then we were also going to be attending 3WLN in Switzerland at the end of April, and that got canceled as well. And, you know, the hope was to do some interviews while we were on the road and to see what kind of awkward situations and places we could be recording in, but obviously that's not happening. And I'm not in my storage place in my house, so that feels a little bit better than where you're at. You know, one of the things I noticed a few weeks ago is that we were just getting disoriented as a family. And so we came together and we talked through how can we have some rhythms in place so that everybody wasn't just going off into their own room or staying on their device. So we created family rhythms centered around doing a devotion together, having a family meal together, and trying to go to bed at the same time every night. And so we've been kind of hit or miss on the bedtime, but the family meals has been great. We actually sit in the living room and watch TV during the family meal because our dining room really isn't a dining room.
Okay.
As we're in this transition house, so we don't really have a table that we can sit around. But we've really enjoyed that, and we've been doing our family devos together, and that's been really, really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed that.
Well, today is going to be a little different type of episode. We love to tell stories, and we're definitely going to do that in the future, but we want to pause for a moment and process together some implications for the current season we're in. So I'm really excited about our conversation today. It's been a few weeks in the making, but we're going to be discussing some writings that you've done, Nate, looking at implications for the church as we come out of this COVID-19 global pandemic that we've been in, and how we engage and function in this new reality. So I'm really excited for this conversation today.
Yeah, as we entered into this quarantine, this lockdown, and as we saw the virus begin to kind of move in this direction, it just started stirring up a lot of questions within me. And I know a lot of other pastors and churches were asking about what does this look like and for how long is this going to stick around? And so as I started reading articles, actually, back in late March, I just started noticing some of the writings where, especially as you read about what was happening in Europe and in China, there seemed to be a lot of ideas beginning to float around about what changes permanently or for the foreseen future that were going to come into our society. And I thought, you know what, as churches, we need to be on top of that and begin to think through what those changes are going to be, you know, as we go shopping or just out into our community. And then what are the implications from those changes for the church? I think the church needs to see what's coming and then to be able to adapt to it.
Yeah, we've been reading a lot of articles. I think anyone that's been following this has probably seen all kinds of information that's come out. One of the popular articles that I've read recently is Andy Crouch and some folks at Praxis Journal wrote an article called Leading Beyond the Blizzard, where they talk about this experience as a blizzard, as a winter, or as an ice age. So a blizzard, he defines as something you kind of deal with now and you kind of wait for it to pass. You hunker down and in a few weeks it'll be gone. A winter is where you kind of find solutions for the season that we're in. So it's not just a few days or weeks, but you're looking at a few months, you know, dealing with the season. But again, with the intention that you're going to eventually get back to normal. The third kind of way that this could formalize in the future is as an ice age. And this will affect everything. You know, it'll affect how we do things in the future, what things look like. And so the authors started to kind of piece out, you know, is this a blizzard? Is it a winter? Is it an ice age? And those categories helped me as we processed, what does the church need to do if this is a blizzard, if it's a winter, or if it's an ice age?
That was very helpful for me too. And I know a lot of pastors and churches have read that and are wrestling through that. I think one of the challenges in reading that article and coming to the realization that what if this is an ice age, or at least a mini ice age, whatever that means in this context,
yeah,
that can become very overwhelming.
Absolutely.
In terms of thinking about decisions I have to make, changes that might be coming our way, and what does this do for the church? And so a quote that I found from Kerry Newhoff, he put it this way: the world at the moment is volatile, uncertain, and anxious. And when the world is that unpredictable, you can't make decisions for 6 months from now. You just need to make the right decisions for today. And so I think that kind of helps put into context that, okay, this may be something that lasts, the implications of this virus may last for 12, 18, 24 months, maybe longer. But in the terms of leadership, leading a local church, you know, what are the decisions that we can make right now, today, that will get us through these next few days, that'll get us through this week or the next few months, and not having to think about that big picture.
Absolutely. And I think you've done a really great job at helping process through that, because in one sense, you have to make the right decision for today, but you also can't just put on blinders and not realize that something may change in the future. So it's that balance of what's the right decision for today, but also what am I learning? How am I growing? What am I trying to understand? You know, we live in uncertainty right now, but how do I get prepared for whatever this new reality could potentially be? And so that's why I love these implications that you put together. And this document, which is 7 implications for the church post COVID-19, can be found on our website. If you go to CHOG Global, so that's CHOGglobal.org/S1E8. So those numbers stand for season 1 and episode 8. That'll get you to our page for with this episode, and I'll also have that document linked there. So that's chogglobal.org/S1E8.
Yeah, so let's jump into these. Just so you know the format, we're going to identify the implication, make a couple of statements, but then we want to kind of land on what does this mean for the church. And so a lot of the conversation for each of these implications will land there. Implication number one is that public spaces will be adapted for distancing restrictions. And I actually wrote this probably about a month ago at the beginning of April, and you're starting to see this taking shape now. So you're seeing sneeze guards in place, you're seeing markers in aisles, you're seeing a lot of different restrictions happening. You're seeing some restaurants restaurants beginning to open, you're going to see them at 25% capacity, 50% capacity, whatever, you know, their state is restricting or the guidelines are from their state. And so I think you're going to see a lot of this, a lot more of this in public spaces, not just in restaurants, but in workplaces as well.
And I think for the church, as we think about this, you know, we can either choose to buck the trends and decide that we're not going to make those kind of changes. But I think if we make that decision, one of the things we need to be aware of is that people from the outside, the people that we're trying to engage and reach, they're going to start living in a world that does have those kinds of things. And so as they walk into our spaces, the way we choose to put our spaces together is going to reflect what we think about, not just the society, but also the people that are coming in. Do we care about their safety and their health? And whether we mean it to reflect that or not, the decisions we make are going to be received or read through that kind of a lens. So I think it's really important that churches begin to think about this and not just see it as a, oh, that's something that society's dealing with. We don't have to deal with that.
Absolutely. And so from just the physical aspect of our facilities, how are you handling your seating capacity? What rooms are designated or marked off? I mean, there's a whole host of implications that come from changing and thinking through our public space and our buildings and classrooms.
And one of the things that this challenges, I think, for us are some of our specific communal practices that we do together. So I think about things like communion. I think about things like baptism. All of these elements that happen within the church are things that happen in group settings. I mean, imagine passing a plate with food that you're going to eat off of now in light of this COVID-19 crisis. It's just going to it's going to change the way we do that. The thing that's important to realize is that those communal practices aren't just things that we do. They have meaning and things behind them. And anthropology, they're called rites of passage. And rites of passage are things that we do that help us know how we're connected to a community. And so globally, there are all kinds of specific rites of passage. The U.S. doesn't have as many specific rites, but the little ones we do have, like graduation, weddings, communion, baptism, religious rites of passage, have all been lost during this time, at least in the ways that they used to be experienced. I was talking to somebody recently, and they challenged that and said, well, actually, during World War II, we also had a pause on those kinds of events. That may be true, but the religious events were still able to continue during that time. Maybe graduations didn't. But communion, the act of joining together in worship, were all still happening. And those are things that haven't happened in the same ways that we were used to in the last 6 to 8 weeks. Rites of passage are vital to our identity. I think those are things that both at the technical level, we have to think about how do we do communion differently. But we also have to think about this at the identity level. How will the changes that we choose to make affect the way we understand ourselves and the practices that we choose to do together?
Implication number two is demand for online services will increase. And I think through this, people have become more comfortable talking online, meeting online, even shopping online. I mean, the shopping aspect, that's kind of been part of our norm and our culture for the last few years. But I think those other things in terms of talking and meeting online, people have become more accustomed to it. They may not like it, but they've become more accustomed to it.
And people of all generations are yes, moving into that reality as well. I mean, I've talked to family members that are now shopping online and picking up their groceries and had never had to do that or never thought about doing that before, you know, but they're finding that comfortability as well.
Yeah. And so I think businesses and organizations, including churches, having an online presence, it's not just about having a website anymore. It's about how are you engaging and how are you creating a platform for people to engage, whether it's through your website, again, because there's other aspects of that you can create in your website, social media, that sort of thing. So it's got to move beyond just having a static website.
The other thing that's connected to this is that I think that a lot of people were thrown into online services. When things happened 6, 8 weeks ago, churches immediately moved online, which is great. They really took advantage of that opportunity to engage in an online platform. The problem is that the online experience is a context in and of itself. You know, we wouldn't consider taking curriculum from our adult Sunday school classes and just handing it to our kids' teachers and saying, hey, use this with your kids, or vice versa, taking kids' curriculum and giving it to the adults. But that's kind of what we've done with online services. We've just taken exactly what we've done on a Sunday morning, and we've put it in a video format online. And I think we're missing out on the reality that this is a completely different experience, and we have to think about it as a different experience.
Yeah, one example of that, we did that in the beginning. We just took what we were doing normally as if people were in the room and put that into our online format. And it took maybe at least one, maybe 2 weeks before we began to realize, you know what, this is a lot different. We're experiencing our services differently by watching it on TV, sitting with our family in the living room versus being in the auditorium, being present, you know, when the live sermon and live music. And so as a church, especially our senior pastor or worship pastor, they changed that. They did different camera angles, they spoke differently. We did different things so that it fit that context better.
I actually heard somebody describe those kinds of online services like a Google Translate version of our church services, which I thought was a genius analogy. So if you ever use Google Translate before, it can give you a competent translation. Like I can translate something and somebody can read it and more or less get the idea of what I'm trying to say. But it's definitely not nuanced. It's definitely not fully understandable. It definitely doesn't understand the cultural dynamics of what you're saying. And I think that's what's happened with our church services. People can get it for the most part,
yep,
but it's not really connecting with them in the specific online experience and context.
And so there's other implications as well. Beyond just the service, the Sunday service, there's so many other things that we are doing as a church. And one of that is, how do you equip disciples? How do you make disciples? How are you connecting with people in an online format that helps them pursue their relationship with Christ? And so those are things that we need to think through. Again, many states are lifting their restrictions and guidelines, but at some level, I think that this is going to stick around. I think, again, there's going to be more people who are comfortable maybe having a foot in both camps, whether it's doing stuff online or doing stuff in person. But I think as a church, we need to wrestle through, what does that look like? How are we developing new ministry leaders? How are we doing pastoral care virtually and in person?
I've heard stories from other countries where there may be places where there's stigma associated with going to a church, but because the service was online, they've been able to engage people that would never step foot in their church, but they will watch an online service. And so that's a really neat barrier that's being broken down by us having more services online. But I just think we need to be creative in the ways that we do that and how we utilize that to its fullest potential.
And it can't just be an add-on. I think we need to be able to focus on it for the reasons we just stated.
Absolutely.
Implication number three is that workplaces will be forced to decentralize at varying levels. And again, we have experienced this over the last few months. Most of us, many of us, have had to work remotely. We've had to move our office, our computers and desk, and basically our office space from whatever building we were working at into our homes. And now we're dealing with kids who are doing school online and spouses who are also working online. And so we've had to decentralize as a society and as a culture to varying levels. And I think the same thing is going to be happening in the church. Bosses, employers are having to learn how to deal with and manage employees virtually. How do you hire virtually? How do you fire virtually? How do you have those crucial conversations that you need to have with your coworkers or your bosses or your employees in a virtual Zoom room? And so I think those are some of the implications that are coming out of this.
And I think a lot of our churches, like you said, are going to have to start processing that and what that looks like. And as you do that, let me encourage those listening, those that are in church settings. One of the people you should be reaching out to immediately are missionaries. Missionaries have had to live this lifestyle for years, where their home is also their office, is also the place where their family is. Many of them have kids in the home. And so they've had to learn to navigate all of these different elements of both a work life and a family life. One of our staff members at Global even commented on how this transition has felt like their first year on the field when his family moved to be missionaries. And I think that that's been a reality for a lot of people of how do we make this work as a family? It's disorienting. So if you're processing that, I just encourage you to call up a missionary and ask them how they deal with it. You know, part of it is what you described, Nate, which is the family rhythms. You create a family rhythm that allows you to separate some of those elements of your life so it doesn't all overlap.
The other component of this, and I don't want to dive too deep into it, but I do want to offer this as a question to the church is, as we think about centralization versus decentralization, our conversation so far has been about the individuals, the people who are working in these organizations. What about, though, from a church's perspective, from a programmatic standpoint or a ministry standpoint? So many of our churches have been and continue to be what I'll call Sunday-centric, where Sunday morning services is the number one priority in the church. And that's not necessarily our commission as disciples. We are called to go out to make disciples, and it has more of a relational component to it that happens Monday through Saturday and not necessarily on a Sunday morning. And so
how do we decentralize our churches?
Yeah. How? Come on, Andrew, give us the answer. How do we do that?
Listen to our next episode where we will tell you all the answers for that.
There are a lot of great churches. There's networks who have been wrestling with that, who have moved into that. But by and large, the church in America has not moved there. And I think that is one of the great pieces that is going to have to stick around, and churches are going to have to develop as we move into the future, where ministry isn't always going to be able to be from the top down in terms of paid staff doing the work, but where the paid staff, the pastors, the leaders, they're equipping others to do the work of the ministry, almost like what Paul was saying in Ephesians 4 when he was trying to give the church instructions on how to systematize the church with leaders. So,
and if people do want to hear more about that, Pastor Beth Wolf, the episode we did with her, she talks about a lot of the work that they've done in their church to kind of push people out to go and do ministry. It would be a great one to hear some great ideas. If you are asking, if you want to answer the question,
absolutely.
Don't just listen to the next episode. Listen to a few episodes past.
Yeah, because the next episode isn't going to have any answers. It may have more questions. Implication number four, socializing will change as we greet, communicate, and interact. I thought it was interesting. Soon after we were in lockdown mode, we finally got out as a family because the weather was nice and we were able to take a walk. And keeping our social distancing measures, we were able to go on a walk and we saw a man coming up. He was walking towards us and he stopped. He stayed probably 12, 15 feet away. And he was asking about our dog and what kind of a breed she was and all that kind of stuff. And so we had that conversation. And after he left, we got further down a little bit, one of our daughters said, "Man, that was so weird to interact and talk to somebody outside of my family." And I've heard this comment from other people too, that it has gotten to the point of not maybe necessarily awkward, although I've heard that phrase, but it seems out of the norm when you begin to talk to strangers. And so I just wonder how much of that is going to stick around in our culture as we see these sneeze guards, you know, that are put up, these barriers that are put up in our society and culture, and, you know, the amount of space that we leave between seats and tables and different things like that.
And I think this is going to actually potentially exacerbate some cultural differences regionally. So some places are dealing with coronavirus COVID-19 at a much higher level than other places. That is going to change the experience of the people that are in those locations. It'll also affect the way that they emerge from this lockdown experience. And so I think one of the challenges is going to be the church is to recognize that people in different pockets of our world may experience this very differently in terms of how they expect other people to interact with them for their health and safety and for the health and safety of others.
So I think one of the very practical things that we need to work through or think through as a church is, what do we do on Sunday mornings with our greeting time? Many churches still have the meet and greet where they shake hands with one another and encourage that. But as churches, again, as leaders, we need to be sensitive to everybody who comes into the door to worship with us. We need to think about those who are on one end of the spectrum, who are very sensitive, very conscious about where they are sitting, where they are standing, where others are in proximity to them. And then there's others on the other end of the spectrum, too, who are less conscious about their proximity to other people. And they may feel like, you know what, this coronavirus is no big deal. But you also have people coming who are very sensitive and very, you know, some of them may have underlying risk issues, but they need to come and they want to come and be a part of their church community. And so we need to learn and to think through, how are we going to navigate through these challenges?
And that's a great question, I think. Like, if we have people that have vulnerabilities that are at our church, mm-hmm. how do we not force them to be a part of the meet and greet time? Like, I just, this is a terrible idea, but like, do they wear a red sticker? And like, nobody with a red sticker should be hugged or touched. Like, how is it that we make sure that we don't inadvertently cause harm to somebody because they're in a high risk category?
Yep. Exactly. Implication number five, there will be more interest in what is happening globally. And so the coronavirus, specifically COVID-19, has impacted every corner of the world. And most people know or knew that something about the coronavirus in other countries. And, you know, from the U.S., from my little corner in Northeast Indiana, we saw it happening in China. We saw it as it began to enter into Europe, and we saw it as it began to enter into the U.S. And so, you know, we've kind of been watching these trends. And I think those are some of the things that I think are going to stick around and we're going to continue to be aware of as we go into the future.
Yeah, I think a more global view is definitely possible, but I also think that people could potentially localize. I'm hopeful that the church sees this as a global issue and an opportunity to unite and rally together, but I'm afraid that it could breed fear, fear globally in terms of the way that we interact with one another.
Yeah, and I actually get that a lot from people who have read this document, that they have the same sentiment, and I do too, and maybe I need to reword this statement to where it talks more about what are the trends that are happening globally. I think people are going to be more open to the economic trends, the trends in terms of what's happening with travel restrictions to different countries. Obviously, the virus, if it comes back in a second wave, I think people are going to be watching those trends as well. And so it has more to do with the trends that are going to be happening globally than it does in people's kind of interest in what's happening in another country or another continent.
One of the things I think could be really problematic or challenging is that travel, I think, is going to change pretty dramatically in the next, I mean, it already has, but even moving forward, I don't think we're going to go back to the way that travel used to be. And travel is one of the ways that we learn and grow and gain kind of a global perspective. It's a way that we begin to realize that people aren't that much different than us, even though they are culturally different, that we're all, you know, part of the same human race. I don't think that's going to happen at the same level if travel changes or gets more expensive or is more complicated. And so I'm concerned about our kind of global Christianity and a global perspective and how that might shift during this post-COVID time.
Absolutely. I've been a missions pastor or overseen missions for at least the last 10 years in our local context. And to see what missions trips has done in our church and people, it has equipped them. It has allowed them to grow in their faith, just like you said, because they have seen how other cultures and other people are worshiping the same God as they are. And so it is a big concern of mine as well. And I hope that the church doesn't lose that focus or at least that awareness. Implication number six is that isolation will create or heighten some pre-existing issues. And this is not a fun topic to talk about, but I think it needs to be mentioned and I think it needs to be thought through from a church's perspective. So I think there's issues of addiction, mental health conditions, unhealthy relationships that have now been moved behind closed doors and in some ways locked doors. You know, kids who had the ability to go to school every day or at least 5 days out of the week and escape maybe a harmful place no longer have that ability. Spouses who are in unhealthy marriages and, heaven forbid, maybe even domestic violence was part of the relationship or part of what they were experiencing. You know, there's no outlet in many ways for a lot of those. I've read some numbers. I'm not going to say them now, but just that reporting on domestic violence and abuse, all of those have gone down through this lockdown time. And obviously, I think we all know that those cases have not gone down, but the reporting has.
And as a pastor, we may not be able to feel like we can engage in this right in this moment because we don't have access to people. But that doesn't mean that we don't have an opportunity in this moment right now to prepare for what happens post-lockdown, to think about what kind of programs, what kind of community engagement do we need to have in place as people come out of the lockdown and are in need of support. I think in this moment, there's an incredible opportunity for the church to prepare for what it looks like in the next 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, and how the church can make an impact in their community by recognizing some of the problems that we know are happening but are not being reported.
And I think another thing too, you know, is the food scarcity issue. And so just some specific examples or practical examples, again, how are you as a church able to provide food for families, whether it's through food pantry? I think the other thing too through this is that not any one church has to pick up this mantle and carry this burden. I think this issue, this implication itself is a great, great opportunity to collaborate with other churches and other ministries in your community and in your city. You don't have to do it alone. You can work together. Everybody can agree upon these are challenging issues that the church must be able to address. And so why not reach out to other churches, other ministries in your community and work on these together? So our last implication, number seven, is that some restrictions and safeguards will be permanent. So here in Indiana, where both Andrew and I reside, our governor has come out with 5 phases, and we are currently in phase 2 that allows social gathering up to 25 people. Some businesses can go back to work, and some people can go back into work adhering to social distancing measures, hygiene, and that sort of thing. So we'll kind of see how this plays out. But again, I really think that there's going to be some specific things that will stay, again, permanent is all relative at this point. Who knows, you know, permanent could be for the next 3 to 6 months, could be for the next, you know, 1 to 2 years. I don't know, but I think there's going to be a lot of things like wearing masks. I think we have some stores, Costco for one. They are, as of Monday, I believe, they have made it mandatory for all customers to wear masks when entering into the store. So I think there's going to be some things like that that are going to be permanent for a certain period of time.
And I think it's important that we don't see all of these restrictions as negative, but as opportunities for us to learn to live in this new reality. You know, we think about Paul as the first missionary and his missionary journeys, but a lot of Paul's ministry was done from prison in isolation. But even in prison, he was writing letters to churches. He was encouraging them. He was staying connected. And we have a mandate as well to stay connected and to encourage one another, even in the midst of the isolation that we're experiencing. At Global Strategy, our goal is to walk alongside the local church. But that looks really different in this moment. You know, our global personnel are not able to be face-to-face, person-to-person, and present with some of their churches that they serve, but they are able to stay connected through technology and through other opportunities. And even in the midst of all of this isolation, they're still able to continue the work of supporting, encouraging, and walking with the church. So whether this ends up being a blizzard, a winter, or an ice age, it is an opportunity for the church to be creative, to be a light in their community. It's a time for the church that even in isolation, that we can encourage and build up the work, not just in our local communities, but hopefully build up the work of the global church as well.
There's a lot of resources out there. Again, this is another resource that you can use. It doesn't have all the answers. It really doesn't have any answers, but the goal of this was to look at what is going to happen in our society and our culture, what's coming our way. How can we as a church identify what those things are and then contextualize them in our local church and be aware and sensitive, see how we need to adapt as a church. And then there's also a lot of resources in here that I've included, links from other organizations, other ministries, other churches, other church networks. I have included an Appendix C that lists all 50 states. And as of, I think it would have been the beginning of May, what those states are doing as they begin to reopen or think about reopening. And so whatever state you live in, if you live in the U.S., whatever state you live in, it at least gives you a starting point to begin to think through what are the changes coming that we need to be sensitive to and aware of, as well as what else is happening around the country.
Nate, thank you so much for putting this together. It's an incredible resource. Again, if you want to find that 7 implications document, visit our website, chaglobal.org/S1E8. We hope that you'll use that as a resource, and we're praying for you as you engage your community, as the church continues to be a light wherever you are.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andrew. And I hope everybody stays safe. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chaglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.